Over the last 20 years, our next guest has earned annual compound returns of around 16% on his investments. That means that every dollar entrusted to him had grown into around $20 over the last 20 years. Oh, yeah. He's managing around $15 billion, too. Did I mention that? David Swensen is the chief investment officer at Yale University, and he manages Yale University's slightly in excess of $15 billion endowment. He's the author of a new book. The title is Unconventional Success, A Fundamental Approach to Personal Investment. He joins us from Boston, Massachusetts. David Swensen, welcome to the Motley Fool Radio Show.
It's my pleasure.
Now, David, isn't Boston a little closer to Harvard than Yale?
Well, that's true. That's where I am today, but usually you can find me in New Haven, Connecticut.
All right. Makes sense to me. We mentioned your record, 20 years, your tenure at Yale as of April 1985. Your fund has outperformed 99% of all U.S.-based mutual funds. David Swensen, how do you do it?
Well, you know, at Yale, what we've done is we've constructed a portfolio that is well-diversified and equity-oriented. And those two principles really underpin our success.
What does the portfolio currently look like then, as you give us that lens for viewing things?
Well, I'd say it's really quite unusual. We have 14% in U.S. domestic stocks, 14% in foreign stocks. We've got 5% in U.S. Treasury bonds. So a third of assets are in traditional marketable securities. We have an allocation of 25% to real assets, that's real estate, timber, oil and gas. We have a 17% allocation to private equity, leverage buyouts, and venture capital.
Mm.
And we've got a 25% allocation to what we call absolute return, which is a subset of the hedge fund world that works very, very hard to keep the equity risk out of the portfolio.
Mm.
So 67% of assets are in alternatives.
Any timeshares?
No, at least not that I'm aware of.
It's a lot of money to keep track of, $15 billion. And does Yale even need it? What's going to happen to that money?
Oh, you know, the money is used to support the operations of the university. One of the things of which I'm most proud is that when I started in 1985, the endowment only supported 10% of Yale's budget. And that was the lowest level in a century. Today, the endowment supports roughly a third of Yale's budget. So the money's being put to good use.
Mm.
Professorships, student scholarships, supporting research. It's really a good thing.
Absolutely. It's an amazing thing. Let me ask you this. There are other universities, I can think of Harvard as well, that have large endowments. Do you feel competitive with the folks over at Harvard or any of these other large university endowments?
Well, I would say at the outset that I believe that the world would be a better place if educational institutions had more financial support. So one of the reasons I wrote my first book, Pioneering Portfolio Management, in 2000, was to help other not-for-profits manage their assets better. That being said, I'd love to have Yale earn returns that were a slight bit more than all the other educational institutions. So there's an element of competitiveness there.
Did you have any shares of Google pre-IPO?
We did.
How'd you manage that?
Well, Yale's had a wonderful venture capital program, a venture capital program that actually predates my time at Yale, although we certainly made an effort to ramp up our investments in the venture capital world beginning in the early 1990s. And we had exposure to Google as a private company, and it made a very handsome return for the university last year.
And of your percentage points of return last year, what portion did ownership of Google represent?
Oh, it was a relatively small portion. We had a spectacular year. Our fiscal year ends June 30th. We were up more than 22%, and that's in the context of a U.S. equity market gain of somewhere around 8% or 9%. So the portfolio was really firing on all cylinders.
Mm.
And I would say that not even a full percentage point of that gain could be attributable to Google.
Very good. Let's talk now a little bit about stock picking. Within that overall asset allocation, I believe, David, you mentioned maybe 14% of your funds are allocated to the U.S. stock market.
Mm-hmm.
somebody is picking stocks and saying yes on that one, no on that one. What is the process by which that happens, and where does the outperformance come from?
Well, just at the outset, I'd say that we've had wonderful performance in each of our asset classes, wonderful market-beating performance in each of the asset classes. But the way that we do that at Yale is we look for the best external advisors that we can find to manage portions of each of our asset classes. We just don't think it's realistic that we could bring everybody that we needed to make security-specific decisions to New Haven, Connecticut, mm-hmm. and make it happen there. So our partners are scattered all over the world.
Roughly how many different U.S. equities does the fund own?
Well, individual managers take a very concentrated approach. That's part of our philosophy. If you're going to try and beat the index, you don't do that by holding lots of stocks. As a matter of fact, our single largest equity manager over the last 10 or 12 years has had anywhere between 3 and 8 stocks in the portfolio.
Mm. What a telling number, and it just reminds me again of the value of focused investing. There are scattershot approaches, and I guess Peter Lynch in the 1980s was famous for loading up on hundreds of stocks and still creating outperformance, which seems almost mathematically undoable, but it does seem as if one increases one's odds if we don't bet as many times and stay focused on really increasing our knowledge around the bets we do make.
I think that's absolutely right.
David Swenson, you've written about it in your book, again, the title, Unconventional Success, A Fundamental Approach to Personal Investment. You've written that individual investors can be sometimes their own worst enemy. What are the most common mistakes, maybe the most common mistake that individual investors make?
Well, I would say that the most common mistake is that individuals chase what has done well and shun what has done poorly. And it causes them to buy high and sell low and damage their portfolios. A recent Morningstar study compared the stated returns that mutual funds report with the returns that investors actually realize, the difference being the cash flows from investors into those funds. And in every single instance, the individuals realized returns that were worse than the reported returns. And that's because they were buying after something went up and they were selling after something went down. And that's a terribly, terribly tough way to make money.
Do you think we as individuals can train ourselves not to do that? Or are you saying human nature is just too powerful a force?
Well, what I recommend in my book is establishing a sensible set of portfolio targets and sticking with those using plain vanilla index funds. And I think that's the easiest way to try and take human nature and emotion out of the equation.
Peter Lynch wrote a book called One Up on Wall Street, following his career as a public fund manager of great acclaim, certainly, and he's a well-known investor to anybody who's an investor today. And he walked away from the job of being a mutual fund manager and said, in effect, hey, you as individuals, maybe listeners of the Motley Fool radio show, you actually have unstated advantages over the constraints that I was operating under as a successful public mutual fund manager. Lynch would point out that he had to buy hundreds of stocks. He had to maintain a very high degree of diversification because he had so much money to manage. And those of us who have smaller portfolios don't have those kinds of requirements. He became famous for saying and pointing out a number of reasons that individuals actually have advantages over the institutions. Do you disagree with his points? Do you think that he was missing something?
Yeah, I do. I do think Peter Lynch was missing something. Concentration in and of itself is not a virtue. Concentration is only a virtue if you can identify securities that have superior risk and return characteristics. Most individuals, as a matter of fact, nearly all individuals, are not in a category where they can identify securities that are fundamentally mispriced. It's a very competitive marketplace out there. I mean, I know how hard it is to find managers who can consistently beat the market. For an individual to think that they could spend an hour or two a night or a few hours on weekends and go head-to-head with these professionals who are spending their entire careers trying to identify inefficiencies, I think ultimately is a fool's errand.
David, you could be making the big, big bucks on Wall Street. Why have you decided to stay at Yale all these years?
You know, I really love educational institutions. I firmly believe that Yale's mission is a wonderful mission and one that I want to support with my professional efforts. So I'm extremely happy to be at Yale and to be part of Yale.
David Swensen is the author of the book Unconventional Success, A Fundamental Approach to Personal Investment. It's his second book, the year 2005. David Swensen, thanks for joining us on the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
For more foolishness, when you want to hear it, subscribe to the Motley Fool Interviews podcast. It's an audio file that's delivered to your computer or MP3 audio player. Just visit npr.org and click on NPR Podcasts to learn more.